Where's the theme song? Well, I gotta be honest with you, I went over this week because I put together a best of show because I am up in Illinois interviewing Vicki Bennett this week. Very exciting. She's showing a film up there. And so I put together some of my favorite bits of the Miracle Nutrition Hour with Hardy White over the last, recent and not very recent recentness. So please enjoy these classic Hardy White episode bit pieces.
Played on Broadway for many, many months. Would you welcome, please, Miss Lauren Bacall?
Hello.
Whoever has the blue file is in danger.
Who is this?
Don't take the blue envelope. If you do, you're dead.
This is Hardy White speaking. Who am I speaking with, please?
The blue folder. They'll come for it. They'll kill you.
Now, hang on. Is it a folder or a file? I'm getting a pen to write down. Hang on.
Beware. No. No. No, don't.
Hello? Hello? Oh. Huh. Hmm. Well.
Hurry up and find that envelope. I'm looking. He says it's blue. I don't see anything blue. Come on.
20% chance of rain overnight and then clearing mid-morning.
Shut that thing off. I hit it by mistake. Nobody's gonna hear us out here. Must have taken it with him.
Too late to get breakfast.
What do you mean by this?
I mean, is it too late to get breakfast?
Breakfast is just the name of a meal. Any food can be breakfast.
No, I was referring to traditional breakfast food.
Whose tradition?
I don't know.
Well, name a food.
I don't know. Meat. A side dish or drink.
Do you think you could be more specific?
Of course. Breakfast meat. Breakfast side dish.
Who cares? Do you have the envelope?
No, but there's a funny story that goes with it.
You are wasting my time. Where is the blue file?
That is part of the comedy element. You see, we don't know.
Well, you better know and fast, or you will have time for breakfast death.
The Oldsmobile Grand Mark has a special something. It's not the front-wheel drive train power system or engine capacity horsepower voted among the industry best. It's not the safety or design record even. It's the feeling you get when you sit behind the wheel. It's a statement of pride. It's me and my Olds.
I like flavor.
I like flavor.
I like flavor.
I like flavor.
And I like flavor.
My whole family likes flavor, especially in their bread. That's why I serve them flavor bread. The most flavorful bread there is for sandwiches or just eating anytime.
Flavor bread.
Flavor bread.
TBC, Channel 9 in Bropus.
Look at that, Artie.
Thanks, Marjorie.
Butch, that should fix it for you. Ah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I can take apart and reassemble a 68 Chevy Nova, but these 69s, they're a mystery to me. Ah, no problem, man. My grandmother had one. I used to work on it. Well, I can't pay you in money, but the least I can do is let you buy me lunch. Well, I'd be willing to do that. Oh, I'm putting you on. You can just make me lunch. You're a real pal, Butch. By the way, whatever became of that blue envelope case? It was more like just a phone call. That weird guy called saying blue folder, and then nothing since. Thank God. Yeah, count your blessings. You know, there can be too much excitement sometimes. I know what you mean. Oh, spoke too soon. Did you see where it came from? Over there, the parking lot. Careful, Butchie. I think I hit him. You okay? Yeah, I'm all right. Dang it.
Bourgeoisie, get over here.
Coming, Captain.
Yes, Captain, what is it?
So this, Hardy White, he's a friend of yours.
Hardy White, yes, he is a friend of mine.
Well, there's been a shooting over at his place.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, why don't you get over there and see what happened?
Oh, I will, right away, Captain. And then,
And then file a police report.
Yes.
Because you're a police sergeant. And that's what they do.
Yes, of course, Captain. I know all that. I used to be a real estate agent, but now I'm a police officer.
Go!
Do those wrinkles in your shirt got you down, buddy? Are you looking like you slept in your clothes? Well, you need a blast of blast is all in your dryer's wrinkle-free finish cycle. And you'll look like the million bucks you ought to, buddy. There, that's my wrinkle-free blast, buddy. Blast, blasts out wrinkles, and blasts your worries away.
On Dinkus's Pride, Dinkus is torn between the love of his family and his dreams of chasing the stars.
I'm going to the stars. It's what makes me happy.
Until fate intervenes.
Your mother is sick, Dinkus.
And on a brand new episode of There and Mac Again, J.C. gets a taste of his own medicine.
Oh, this is terrible.
I know. I made it.
And Ed ain't gonna like it. Dinkus and There and Mac Again, back to back. It's gonna be a TBC Sunday night.
I need a nice cola. I need a cola that's nice. I need a nice cola. I need a nice cola. I need a nice cola. I need a cola that's nice. I need a nice cola. Nice cola. Nice
cola. Nice cola.
Once upon a time, all the crops failed in Cornland.
What will we do?
Right of Niblet.
But then they discovered Golden Nugget Frozen Corn.
And now we're safe.
Golden Nugget Frozen Corn. It's like something out of a fairy tale.
Nice strike, Hardy. Oh, hi, Don. Hi, Don. Hi, Butch. Why are you here? Are you bowling? No. Oh, hope you're not here on business.
Business? Are they putting the bowling alley on the market?
No, I'm not a real estate agent anymore, Butchie. I'm a police sergeant.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
I'm here to talk about the shooting. Well, we already told everything we know to the detectives who responded to the scene.
Yeah, like I didn't return fire.
Oh, that's good.
Yep.
Well, my captain asked me to talk to you because he knows we're friends. I guess he thought you might be more candid with me.
Candid? You're calling us liars?
Oh, of course not. But maybe you forgot something or it had to do with your... you know, unofficial detective work or time travel, and I can see you not mentioning that.
You better not mention it, you rat.
Butchie, I'm sorry. Is there some case you're working on that might have gotten you in trouble with dangerous types? Not that I know of. We found a dog for Dolly the seamstress. Oh, she did some alterations for me.
Yeah, good tailor. Hate her dog.
Well, we really don't have any cases going at the moment.
Except the blue envelope.
The blue envelope? Blue envelope, blue folder, blue file. I've never seen it. An anonymous caller described it over the phone and said it was a dangerous item that would get whoever had it killed.
Well, maybe that's it. Do you have it?
No, I don't have it. I don't think so. We don't have it, right, Butch? Butchie?
Yeah, you don't have it.
You have it?
Well, not on me. It came in the mail. I immediately hid it because I sensed danger.
Well, that's probably why they came looking for you. But you do know where it is. That's equally dangerous.
Yeah, but there's one good thing about it.
What's that?
I forgot where I put it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, well, they don't know that. Run!
Take cover.
Watch out, Butch!
Go around the other side.
He headed out the back door. I'll follow him.
I'll circle around. Hey, Hardy, did you get him?
Lost him, Don. Nearly had him.
Dang it.
You two are lucky you didn't get killed.
Okay.
And you're lucky you didn't kill anyone. Why did you return fire in a crowded bowling alley?
Ah, sorry, Captain. It was the real estate agent instinct in me. I couldn't resist the urge to a speedy counteroffer.
Now, all of you, go home before you cause more trouble.
Ah, but Captain, I think we found out something about the case. There's a blue folder.
I'm about to blow a folder if you don't get out of my office now!
See, somebody isn't interested in solving cases. Come on, Butch. I'm sorry, you guys. I'll walk you out. I'm sorry the captain won't listen, but I will.
Thanks, Don. I mean, we don't have much to go on. Butchie didn't even read the file, so we don't even know what's in it, did you, Butch? Butch?
Maybe a little. Butchie? Something about shipping routes or something involving illegal something-something? Well, that could be a valuable clue. Hey, that's the guy. That's him in that car there.
Oh, he sees us.
Go, go, let's go. I'll follow you in my police van.
Can you imagine looking at that all day? Hi, I'm broadcaster Hardy White. And that's what radio folks like myself look at when we speak into the microphone. It's the inside of your brain. And it's what gives life to words. Words themselves are symbols with no substance and no objective meaning beyond another's understanding of it. You gotta love it.
There was nothing on the boat, boss, I tell you. I feared as much.
We searched the whole thing. No blue file.
Unfortunate. Since if we fail to produce the blue folder, Mr. G will kill us. And yes, I said us.
But we think he mailed it to a private detective named Hardy White.
What? Have you found him?
Yeah, we shot at him twice.
Shot at him? Trying to kill him?
Yeah.
See, you're repeating your mistake. By killing Harris before he could tell you where the file was, you sort of shot yourself in your own foot. Do you see the pattern? If he's dead, he can't be forced to give us the blue envelope. Got it?
Yes, boss.
Now go kidnap Harvey Wyatt or whoever he is and bring him to me. Oh, and a tropical drink. And step on it.
Yes, what's this?
Excellent. My sources in the police department have told me where the blue file is. I no longer need those three idiots. Dingo, come here.
Yes, master.
I want you to find and destroy someone named Harty White and bring me the blue file. And when you're done, kill those three idiots in Hawaii.
Find and destroy.
At last, I would have the blue envelope. The blue folder shall be mine.
Destroy Hardy White. Find. Kill.
And yet in their foolishness they demanded a king. And so the Lord commanded Samuel, and Saul ruled over them. Hey, crazy street preacher.
Oh, hi, Lou.
You got a good corner today, right between two mattress stores.
These two mattress stores on opposite corners of the street used to be two gas stations. That tells you something. People used to want to go places. Now they just want to sleep.
I hear you.
Oh, good. You hear me. I can stop shouting.
Do you ever get tired of screaming the truth from a busy sidewalk while most people are oblivious to your warnings and wisdom?
It doesn't really bother me. Most undertakings are futile. When I was young, I had a job on the set of Cool Hand Luke, the Paul Newman movie. My job was to dig ditches and fill them back in.
Wow, they had stunt diggers?
Yep. Newman et al. Were too soft to dig their own ditches. I'm kidding. They didn't have the time. So we'd dig one and they'd film and we'd fill it back in.
So you're used to having your work undone?
Of course. All work is eventually undone.
What are you preaching today?
Oh, Samuel. You know, people have laws and judges, but they're jealous of other countries that have kings, and so they want to be ruled by a king instead of governed by laws.
Always timely.
People are naturally frustrated by the apparent futility of justice, so they want absolute authority. They are afraid to be self-governing and long for a strong parent.
I think ideas like relativity and nuance and circumstance and all are confusing to people. We like absolutes.
Well, that would be fine in some universes, but not here. What's that universe with all the red string?
I don't know that one, but I get your point.
Stringy World or something.
I'm not sure. Anyway, it was great seeing you, CSP.
Red Twine Land.
Okay. Ciao, my awesome friend.
This is not the Red Stringy Dimension, fools!
So that's why I never told you. To spare you from being crushed by the news of my betrayal.
Well, thanks, Butchie.
Hello.
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 Ooh, nice shop.
Thank you. I have just about everything you can imagine in here, so look around.
I love antique shops.
How much for the ceramic Hitler?
I think it's James Joyce.
James Joyce? Why would she have a ceramic James Joyce? Why would I have a ceramic Hitler? Touché. And yet...
Are you thinking about getting that ceramic Hitler?
Let me see that. Oh, yes, here's the front. It's an old bottle of Little Dictator brandy. It's supposed to be Charlie Chaplin.
I told you.
You said James Joyce.
I misspoke. I meant Charlie Chaplin.
Ooh, depression glass.
Look at this fun back scratcher. Maybe it's for taking your boots off.
It's for castrating bulls.
All right.
This is where I'd come if I were decorating a 1980s fern bar.
McThursday's was like that. Cheddar soup and pictures of your great-grandpa.
Man, what an old building. Smells like 200 years ago. Are you boys time travelers?
Yes, ma'am.
I have a whole secret room of future collectibles and futiques, I call them. Do you like Vanta Black dinnerware? Remember that butter dish made of light at Dorothy Kilgallen's?
Was that from the future?
It had to be, right?
Guys, look at this. Do you remember being on the cover of Look magazine in 1964?
No. There we are.
I'll solve part of the mystery for you. We're wearing the same clothes there as we are right now. So whatever it is that got us there happens today.
Look out!
This is impossible. We are impossible. It's the impossible that makes the possible possible. And when the impossible people do the impossible, it becomes possible. One life. One life is not enough to do the impossible, but three impossible lives? Thousands? Imagine the possibilities.
Whoops. You bumped into a 1964 cabinet.
What now?
Some of these furniture pieces are time doorways. That's the 1964 armoire. So welcome to 1964. By the way, this year I'm a freelance photographer for Life magazine, and I'd love to take your picture for an issue about people who buy junk in junk shops. It's called Why Do People Buy This Junk?
So that's all there is to it?
No mystery.
It'll take just 15 minutes, and you can get back to your own year after that.
Obviously, we say yes.
You were right, Butchie. That was totally cool. The whole building's gone.
I told you. Now I'm bored again.
What do you want to do?
Got any video games?
I have one that's based on a sort of lesser-known Bresson film, The Remark Bartholomew.
I got to level 3 on Mouchette, so I bet I kick your butt.
Well, we'll see.
Bartholomew?
You can't live here anymore, you worthless waif whose parents are dead. Off with you.
Poor Bartholomew.
Off with you.
Poor Bartholomew.
Why are you back? Be gone with you.
Dirty shoes. Dirty shoes.
Why are you back?
You better be on your way to school. Dirty shoes.
Come with me to the hunting cabin.
Bartholomew.
You look so pretty. I kept these bedsheets your parents were wrapped in so you could wear them as a dress.
Come with me to the hunting cabin.
Dead parent girl, come sell these breads. Dead parent girl, stay with the cart until I get back.
Bartholomew.
Bartholomew! Dead parent girl.
Never forget me. Also, collect all the golden bicycles. Collect all the golden bicycles. Collect all the golden bicycles.
Come buy these apples.
As sweet as your memories.
Come buy the apples of effortless will.
Wrap yourself in the golden cloak of expectations.
And sleep.
Sleep.
Sleep the sleep of innocence.
Apples.
Hello, dreamer. We've been expecting you. Well, not you exactly. Someone like you. What I mean to say is we are prepared, and we've taken this old house and turned it into a stage. Actually, many stages. As many stages as there are rooms. And you just go from one stage to the next until you find the one you like. And then it's out the back door with you. But up until that point, oh, the wonders you will see. What's behind this door? Shall we see?
It's the talk show, starring your host, with his guests, and now,
hello, welcome everybody, thank you. Thank you. Welcome to my talk show. And that's a great description, because that's what we do. We talk and show, and you watch and listen. It's like show and tell in school. So authoritarian, isn't it? Not like show and ask. I'm going to stand here and not say anything of substance for a few minutes, and then we're going to begin to parade some actors before you. Actors eager to fool you and convince you of their exceptional nature when, in fact, they have been chosen at random. Thank you again for choosing this stage of your life, and please join me on this couch so that the lies I tell you will seem more sincere, so that your guard will fall, and I can access the points in your mind beyond reason. Would you like that? All right. Fantastic, I thought so. Our first guest tonight is my old friend, Lou Register. He's a manual laborer, a friend, a brother, a believer in things unseen. Lou?
Hey, Hardy. Thanks, everybody. All right. Good to see you, Hardy.
Good to see you, Lou. You are my first guest. I'm glad you called me a guest, since I was brought here against my will and I was wondering how I'd be treated. Oh, we plan to treat you with all the respect you deserve.
Thanks, I guess.
So, tell us about the things you think we should know about you that would make you seem valuable as a person.
Well, as you know, I work at a loading dock, unloading trucks that deliver goods and taking those goods into a warehouse, usually on a forklift, but sometimes we have to actually lift boxes manually.
Ooh, that sounds fascinating.
It is.
Do you know what's in the boxes?
Sometimes you do. Sometimes the boxes will say things like pride or man's inhumanity to man or radios.
Which boxes are the heaviest?
The ones marked grief. We get them regularly mixed in with the ones marked Formica countertops and hoses.
Oh, what type of hoses?
You know, I don't know.
You're a big man, aren't you?
I'm large for my age, I guess.
And what is that?
A blessing and a curse.
No, I mean, what age are you?
Oh, reason, I think, or jazz.
Speaking of jazz, you have a new album out.
Nope.
And we've heard it's great.
Not possible.
Would you like to do a number from it?
Don't see how I could.
Oh, come on, Lou. Folks, would you like Lou to do a number from his new album?
Okay, I will.
The Goblin Men have the sweetest fruits. The sweetest fruits have dark gray clouds. The winds sweep in, the gate swings shut. The trees bend over and bow to death. I mark the days with cold, dark stones. The hills change over from green to gold. The voices moan, the mountains fall. The end of the earth is the end of it all.
That's wonderful, Lou. Oh, that was terrific. And when is the album due out and where can we get it?
Well, there is no album. There's only that. That was it.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Now is the time to start saving our pennies for it, I suppose.
I suppose.
All right, well, after this brief commercial, we're going to be right back with the inimitable Butchie Spinoza.
We're the Funky Friends.
That's us.
It's the Funky Friends Hour. Come along.
It's the Funky Friends Hour. Come along.
The Funky Friends Hour. Come along.
We're the Funky Friends Hour. Come along.
Come on, funky friends. Let's have fun.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, man, turn that off. I can't take it right now.
It sounds so dated.
I know.
What year was that?
1970-something. I don't remember.
What were we thinking?
Well, I thought maybe we could have a positive influence on kids.
Funky friends?
Well, it wasn't my idea. They get you all turned around. You think they want to do a show you do, but it ends up being something totally different. I wanted something slow and gentle like Mr. Rogers.
But instead, I was some kind of robot whose head kept coming off and was addicted to potato chips or something.
And I was some kind of rodent who could fly.
Well, they convinced me this is what kids wanted.
The original cartoons they showed on TV weren't even for kids exclusively. They were from the movies, like the original Popeye.
Oh, original Popeye rocks!
And those old Tex Avery cartoons. I think those guys operated right on the edge of alcohol poisoning.
Whatever happened to our funky friend's buggy?
Well, it was a cartoon, so I imagined they erased it.
No. There was a real version for our live appearances.
Yeah, that was right at the dawn of indoor shopping malls.
Slightly before, I think.
Remember when we toured schools and you got hit in the face with a Fresca?
Yeah, man, that hurt.
Listen, maybe we should try doing a kids show again.
Kids already listen to our show.
Oh, Lord, they do?
Of course.
Okay. Hi, kids. Don't smoke. I'm serious. It killed my grandparents. Granddad had cancer, and Grandma had a massive stroke.
Butchie, that's very thoughtful, but I think there's better ways of giving kids lessons.
Life's harsh. Learn young.
Hey, kids, don't lie. It complicates things. You can be manipulative and still tell the truth.
Lou?
I'm just having fun.
I'm not sure what we should tell kids anyway. Just treat them according to your values. Try to pass on the love and patience you were shown.
I remember how my grandma took the time to patiently and lovingly instruct me how to kill a chicken.
Lou, I would love to walk the kids through a needlepoint lesson. I'd update it, too. I could teach them how to needlepoint an Illuminati pillow or something. What's one of the new musical acts? I could interview them.
Do kids still listen to the J5?
Maybe, but that's... you're not going to get an interview.
How about Mr. Spock from Star Trek?
Leonard Nimoy has passed away.
Oh, forget it, then. I'm too out of touch to help kids.
Nonsense. They need to hear from you guys more than ever. Share stuff that you loved as a kid.
Ohio Players.
Wacky Packs.
Okay, that's a start.
Kids, try making some stickers that are parodies of your favorite products, but make them disgusting. Like, if you like macaroons, make it a box of maggotaroons, so the coconut looks like fly larvae. Gross, am I right?
Hey, kids, go on YouTube and listen to the song Funky Worm over and over and over again until your mom is super mad.
Well, that's a start. I was thinking about taking the kids on a tour of a factory to see how hernia belts are made. Or maybe underwear.
Walk this way, won't you?
This is a very big machine.
Yes, it's the waistband machine. The machine sews on the waistbands.
I can see that. And what's this one?
This one creates a fly in case it's men's underwear. Do you guys make novelty underwear here, like superhero underwear or what have you? No, just tidy whities.
Do you have winter ones that are called hardy tidy whities?
No.
Lou.
Sorry.
What's this machine?
This one sews little tags on the back so you know which way to put your underwear on. We'll all be.
Kids today are too sophisticated for that.
I don't think sophisticated is the word. Sophisticated is like when they're into experimental theater or free jazz or something. Kids today just don't give a damn where stuff comes from, just so it arrives the next day on their doorstep.
I don't think that's true, necessarily. I think kids will always be curious. So I'm going to keep telling them stuff that I think is interesting and not listen to what advertisers tell me kids want.
Hope all your dreams come right. Hope all your dreams come right. Hope all your dreams come. Hope all your dreams come. Hope all your dreams come right. Hope all your cares flee swift. Hope all your cares flee swift. Hope all your cares flee. Hope all your cares flee. Hope all your cares flee swift. Hope all your dreams come right. Hope all your cares flee swift.
Shemp jive, Hardy. Lou, thanks for coming, you guys.
Shemp jive. No problem, Butch. So sorry for your loss.
Yeah, Butchie. Shemp jive. So sorry for your loss. Things like this are tough.
It really is. Thanks so much, Hardy.
So, at the risk of embarrassing myself, I have to confess something. I'm not sure I know who exactly it is who died. Who is the deceased?
You are.
Oh, crap.
That's not funny, Butchie.
No. You are. The unknown relative. You see, this is the funeral of the unknown relative. In my religion, we have this ceremony to honor those who we might never have met or known well, but for whom we can have memories. And we pay tribute to them, the unknown relative.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Shemp jive, everyone.
Sit down, we're starting.
Shemp jive!
Go to hell.
Go to hell and return again.
Thank you. And thank you all for coming today to the funeral for the unknown relative. As those who share our faith know, today we honor those who we might never have known, but about whom we can and should have wonderful memories. Memories that can shape our lives going forward in case those memories were never previously formed. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
For our visitors today, we invite you to also participate in saying some words for you are, the unknown relative. In fact, it is our tradition to have visitors go first.
Who would like to go?
Hardy, you should go.
No, I got no idea what to say. Well, what do I say?
Give the speech you'd like to give about a relative you would have liked to have had.
The fellow with the hoary beard. Perhaps you'd like to go. All right. hello, everyone.
Shim Jive.
My memory of the unknown relative, you are, is, fishing. Yeah, he once took me fishing on a boat. And I don't normally like fishing. But I was a young fellow, and I was glad that there was someone interesting like you are who wanted to spend some time with me. Now, I had no idea what I was doing, but he was very patient and showed me how to bait the hook and how to cast. And I didn't want to say this to him, but I really hoped I didn't catch a fish. The idea of having the fish dying and squirming on the line terrified me. But for some reason, I guess because I trusted him, I told him I hoped I didn't catch anything. And he told me he secretly hoped the same thing. He said that fishing for him wasn't about catching a fish. It was about hope, about dreaming, about the wonderful possibilities. Actually, catching the fish was a letdown. It was the moment when endless and infinite possibilities are forced into the confines of reality, and they become limited and small. When all the wonderful variations and dreams lie ahead, the world is vast and limitless. He said he doubted we would catch anything because he never had on this lake, and that's why he always came back. The rest of the time, we just told stories to each other about what the fish were up to under the boat, plotting and mocking our bait, talking among themselves, some as big as whales, some every color imaginable, singing fish, magic fish. What did I do?
You said the secret word.
What? Magic?
Yeah, if you say it, we yell and you get 20 fuel points. Continue.
Oh, okay. Well, that was about it. I just want to thank you all for teaching me the grandeur of dreams. Thank you, friend. That was wonderful. Would another visitor like to go?
I'll go. Ship jive, y'all.
Ship jive.
When my dad died, my grandfather got a second job so he could earn more money to send me to a special private school called the Academy for Sad Boys. You'd think it would have been a great place, but a lot of the boys were mean, and because I was fat even then, I felt like an outcast. So on top of losing my father, I felt like I was ugly and less than everyone else. One year, I decided to play football because I was big. But I wasn't much of an athlete, and the head coach always gave me a hard time for being slow. But one of the assistant coaches was a volunteer. It was UR. And he never looked down on me. In fact, he would always find something I was doing right and encourage me, talk me up. He'd say, "No one can stop this big man. He's going to be great because he has heart." Now, none of that was true, but he believed in me, and it made me believe in myself and try harder. I never let him know the effect it had on me. I think it literally saved my life, the kindness and positive encouragement he showed me. He was the only one, and I never got to tell him. And now he's gone, and I wish I could say to him, you changed my life. But I can't. But I can say to all of you, please don't forget, you are the unknown relative.
Thank you, friend.
That was beautiful, Lou. Thanks.
Butchie, you won Believer of the Month. Would you like to go next?
Sure. Shemp Jive. My name is Butchie Spinoza. So I lived when I was younger in South Jersey, and there was this fellow who worked with my grandfather at the soup factory. It was UR. My grandfather would have him over sometimes because they enjoyed hanging out. UR was from Pittsburgh, and whenever he came over, he would talk to me, take a real interest in me. He wouldn't talk to me like a little kid, wouldn't talk down to me. He'd speak to me like an equal. He'd tell me about Pittsburgh, about his brother who'd been a player for the Pittsburgh Crawfords, a Negro League team. He told me about how he wanted to be a doctor, but a bunch of bad stuff happened, and he ended up working in a factory mostly. He was still a bone setter, though. If you broke an arm, he knew how to set the bone and fix you up as if he really was a doctor. He still had a love of learning, too, and would talk to me like I was an intellectual. He'd say things like, "What are your favorite operas, Butchie?" And I had no idea what an opera was, but I didn't want to seem dumb, so I'd say, "All of them." And he never called me on it. He'd just say, "You're a well-rounded thinker, Butch. I like all of them, too." I wanted to be all the things he thought I already was. And I wanted to be like you are. Kind, thoughtful, willing to humble myself to make others feel good. He was one of the greatest, strongest, and smartest men I ever met. I wanted to be like him, which is why I sometimes pretend I'm from Pittsburgh. Because the greatest man to ever live was from Pittsburgh. A guy who never talked down to a kid, who never gave up on himself. So I want to stand here and say, if you ever doubt yourself or think you have no purpose, please remember, you are the unknown relative.
That was very nice, Butchie.
Wonderful, Butchie.
Thanks. Please stick around afterwards. There's bubble tea.
What is your name, please? My name is Hardy White. What is your name, please? My name is Hardy White. What is your name, please? My name is Hardy White. Two of these men are imposters, and only one of them is the real Hardy White and is sworn to tell the truth. This is a game of deliberate misrepresentation wherein four presumably smart people try to find out which one of these three challengers has sworn to tell the truth. And now let's meet our cross-examiners. Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Butchie Spinoza.
My name is Lou Register.
My name is Don Bourgeoisie.
My name is Hans Conrad.
And I can attest that all of these people are telling the truth. Now, standing here are three people who claim to be the same person by name Hardy White. To tell the truth, only one of these people is the real Hardy White. Now, panel, in front of you, you will find an envelope with a photostatic copy of an affidavit. Please listen as I read it. I, Hardy White, am a resident of Lexington, Kentucky. In 1989, I started on radio in Tallahassee, Florida. I have worked various jobs, including file clerk and grocery clerk and miniature golf clown. In 2012, I began a radio show on WFMU in Jersey City. That show is called Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I swear this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Signed, Hardy White. Now, these three people all claim to be Hardy White. You will be able to ask a question. You have 30 seconds each, and we'll start with Butchie.
Number three. What is the worst thing you can do on radio?
Me?
Yes, number three. What is the worst thing you can do on radio? The answer is dead air.
Oh, sorry. Your time is up, Butchie. Lou?
Number one, what's the best advice you could have for a radio talker?
I would say be yourself. Don't try to do a shtick or do characters. The audience can spot a phony a mile away.
Number two, what's a cubit?
I beg your pardon.
Time's up, Lou. Hans?
Number three, from your biography, it says you've never been a professional broadcaster. Why did you stay with it for so long, if that's the case?
Well, I guess just from the love of the thing. I've always wanted to be on radio.
Number one, same question.
I'm a rebel, Hans. Too uncontrollable for commercial radio. Too much of a maverick.
All right, time's up. Don. Number two. What were your radio influences?
Oh, the Giants. Jack Benny, Don Ameche.
Number three, same question.
Oh, I know I should know this. Oh, man, I can't. This is I can't think of anybody offhand. I know that sounds crazy. Let me just get Dick somebody or something.
All right, panel, the time is up. Let's vote now. Let's see. All four of you have voted for number one. So will the real Hardy White please stand up?
What?
What?
Unbelievable.
Oh, that's not possible.
All right, panel, that's quite a shock. It was number three. Do you have any questions for the real Mr. White?
Yeah, well, why don't you know anything about yourself or radio?
You seem the least articulate and competent. Maybe they should give a show to the two other guys.
Life. And I say to you that life's a gambler, head and shoulders above us all, life's a gambler. And I say to you that life's
here's a bit of my 70s smooth jazz song, Nuggetless. Here's Butchie's rap song, Lynchland.
Sweeping up the bar, the creep in the car. This time you're going too Jimmy Farr. Room, 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 the red room. Some kind of soul tomb. Log Lady Log Flume. In the Lynch theme park, parasitic twin peak. Launch soon. I said launch, not Lynch. Far out space, these nuts don't flinch. I got a low brow, okay? Steal your meager cow, okay?
Total ripoff. The world is whack. That's a fact. I looked it up in a stack of crack magazines a while back. You said Hoboken, I thought you said Hackensack. In that case, here's a Big Mac and a pack of Phillips Golden Blacks. I can hear your lips smack, I can hear your heart attack. You don't lack subtlety, fella School of Hard Knocks faculty buddy. What'd you think was gonna transact? Anyway, Jack, I got clackers from the 70s gonna smack your skull, send a crack down the side like a fontanelle or the Liberty Bell. I'm gonna goof on your product's name like a Spiegelman Wacky Pack. Like I'll say iCAC for iMac or Star Burps with a pick of a guy belching Alpha Centauri. Sorry, not sorry. If it hurts, you should use it more. Go have a light snack and eat a lamp. Hardcore fakers lie on beds of liquid nails, shaking to make it look like a trance. Tip, stamp your website on your old business cards instead of printing more. Lick the floor like a beagle if you're bored. I got more, but there's a time limit for reasons I'll ignore. Suffice it to say, I like it that way. Nice of you to stay. Most leave by now. Hey, there's a thing after the gig if you've no big plans with wigs and fans and French royalty sans, suntans and pants even. If you don't leave early evening and can make it to the part where the king gets naked. And the world is whack. The world is whack.
Act 1, Scene 1. Lou, Butchie, and Hardy sit around the breakfast table.
So I say, I came all the way from Bridgeville. And you say, is that far?
Okay.
Oh, hey. I came all the way from Bridgeville.
Is that far?
No, but if I hadn't come all the way, I wouldn't have made it.
Pass the cream.
This is something that baffles me. So on Perry Mason, sometimes he not only exonerates his client, but he proves that one of the witnesses on the stand is the guilty party. Now my question is, what is the procedure afterwards? Is it a law enforcement thing? Do they arrest the person? They haven't investigated yet. Perry has all the evidence and he hasn't shared it with the LEAs yet. So is it the prosecutor's job? Does the real murderer just walk out?
For your information, Bridgeville is very far from here.
Well, I just kind of made it up.
You didn't make it up. It's a real town. I think the judge probably would order the person remanded into custody.
Are rocks alive? Hear me out.
Act 1, Scene 3. The backyard.
Man, that's a big hole.
That's more than a hole. It's a canyon.
It's a beautiful view of the underground village, though. I know that they lose the roof of their cave, but now we get to look down onto their dwellings from this cliff ledge.
So the premise here is a sinkhole the size of a football field opens up in our backyard, revealing an underground village of cave-dwelling people, sort of in the style of Herbert Reed's Green Child.
Well, one is literary and one is real, but yes, there it is.
So whose property is this?
Who owns the land? I do. I own the land. Butchie, be serious. Land ownership is absurd. What if someone was living in the sky over our heads and decided they owned everything under them?
People who live on the beach sometimes think they own the shoreline, but how is that even possible? Out how far?
If I had a house on the South Carolina coast, I would claim all the land in a narrow strip between me and Bermuda.
I do actually own property on the ocean floor. It's in the Caribbean, and I'm currently renting the property to underwater spirits.
A representative from the underground sinkhole village is coming for coffee this afternoon and to discuss the situation. I own the moon.
Channel 52.
Copy five. My guest doesn't need an introduction, which is good because I haven't written one. But I have, as way of introduction, been writing a book about him and interviewing him for a couple years now on a regular basis. This is just one of an ongoing series of interviews for those books. But there's not much to say about Hardy White that I don't want to save for future books, so you can pay me, but I'll let him tell some of the stories tonight anyway. Please welcome Hardy White.
Hey, Toasty.
Hello, Hardy. Well, you know, it's good to talk to you again. I'm not used to doing it without a drink in my hand. Well, you're welcome. You can drink anything you want out here. Well, yeah, I know. I don't want to. I don't know why I don't want to. I'll tell you why I don't want to, because sometimes I spill my drink. Let's say I'd spill it onto my lap a bit, and my fear is that people are going to turn their heads away just at that moment when I spill it and then turn back and just see the moisture on my lap and think, oh, did he wet himself? I doubt anybody's going to think that you... I don't know. You don't know. I don't know. And if people judge you, I wouldn't... See, personally, I don't think it's a big deal. I wouldn't even mind if somebody... I mean, I would a little bit. It depends how close to them I am. Like, if our thighs are touching on public transport, I'd want them to hold it. But if they're standing across the street and I say, just let it rip, whatever you want to go, you want to... Because I remember peeing my pants was sort of a... Once I got over the humiliation of it, if I ever did it, it was like, this isn't bad. I mean, I was holding it, that hurt. Now I'm letting it go, and that feels great. And like, oh, my pants are soaked. But like, so what, really, in the grand scheme of things? And that was when the whole veil fell. That was, for me, that was the Matrix. And say, really, there's nothing. It's just kind of social pressure that is saying, I don't want to wet myself. That's not where I'm going with this. I'm speaking artistically. I want to pee my pants. And people say, oh, aren't you embarrassed or are you humiliated? And I go, well, that's not, I don't believe that that's an emotion that you can have when you're by yourself. I've never felt humiliated except when I thought a God was watching or an audience or somebody next to me in a classroom. When you think, surely they saw that. That's humiliation. And then fear of being judged. What if you're in a courtroom and you're actually being judged, literally, and then you're thinking, on top of this, I'm going to be morally judged for my hygiene? I mean, it's bad enough I killed somebody. Well, no, but I have a justification. But also now they're looking at me like, woo-wee. So nobody wants to be, or your hat. Could you imagine that? Your lawyer comes to you after you say, oh, I didn't think we were going to lose that case. And they say, that it's the pork pie hat did it. Didn't you see the expressions on the jury? I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but they judged you. And you go, it's not a pork pie hat, it's a Trimley. And it doesn't matter. It won't matter. And that's how I feel a lot about things in my life that don't matter, that none of it did.
Where's the theme song? Well, I gotta be honest with you, I went over this week because I put together a best of show because I am up in Illinois.
name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' 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 name was Ebony.
get into it, lover. I am. You see, I can call you my lover now. You started seeing things my way.